The following is a Reels Channel and Podcast One production, available on Apple Podcasts and PodcastOne.com.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised. A beautiful young wife, 8 months pregnant with her first child, mysteriously vanishes on Christmas Eve.
Within a week or two, everybody in the country knew who Lacey Peterson was.
A shocked community searches in vain.
I am not giving up hope that my precious Lacey and her son Connor will be returned to me safely.
Who would have killed her? Nobody knows, and certainly not her husband.
Her handsome young husband grieves, but his secrets tell a different story.
I'm engaged.
So?
So tell me why a guy like you isn't married already.
A lot of people had suspicions right away.
And what he didn't count on was that the Lacey Peterson case would become the biggest crime story of the new century.
I've been having an affair with Scott Peterson.
Scott, are you guilty?
Scott, what is this?
How can you possibly romance a young lady when your wife is missing with your newborn to be?
Did you murder your wife?
Don't trust anything that they're saying.
I just want to be able to bury my daughter, Scott. Where is she?
Meet Scott Peterson, the husband next door. Until murder made him famous. It's one of the most inexplicable and brutal crimes in recent memory. It provided inspiration for the best-selling novel Gone Girl and the subsequent Hollywood blockbuster film.
As you all know, my wife, Amy Elliott Dunn, disappeared 3 days ago.
The real-life case of 27-year-old Lacey Peterson, whose 2002 disappearance from her home in Modesto, California, and the ensuing investigation captured the nation's attention and became a major media spectacle. Though this story of lies, sex, and brutal murder unfolds like a Hollywood script, all of it actually happened.
Senior crime reporter Steve Helling.
The one thing that's so interesting about Scott and Lacey Peterson is how ordinary they seemed. They were your neighbors. They were your friends. You went to college with them. And if this could happen to them, could it happen to us?
It's not? Why?
21-year-old Cal Poly student Lacey Rocha first encounters Scott Peterson at a restaurant in 1995.
Can I start you off with an appetizer or something to drink?
Two waters?
I think we're going to get a bottle of wine.
Really? Okay. Yes. We've got a great house, Merlot.
That sounds perfect.
At just 23 years old, it was obvious that Scott Peterson was going to have his choice of the ladies. There was no question. He was handsome. He was charming. Even when he was waiting tables.
Reporter Garth Stapley.
Lacey Peterson was bubbly. That she was kind of the life of the party. She was happy and wanted people around her to be happy. And she had a big smile.
You need to leave him your number.
What?
Lacey leaves her phone number with Scott, a seemingly innocent act, but one that would seal her fate. The two begin dating soon after.
2 years later, they got married, they settled down in Modesto, and the fairy tale life began.
At first, the couple put off the idea of children, but in late 2000, Lacey decides she has waited long enough.
I want to stop taking the pill.
Come on, Lacey, not now.
Yes, now. It's time, Scott.
What's the hurry?
You always say that. If it were up to you, we'd never have a baby.
I didn't say that.
When Lacey decided she was ready for a baby, they were going to have a baby. There was no question. She decided it was time, and Scott just had to go along for the ride.
Let's get started.
It takes more than a year and a half, but Lacey finally conceives naturally in May of 2002. By all measures, their storybook life seems set.
I have some news.
What?
What do you think?
You are?
But secretly, Scott dreams of a very different lifestyle. One where he is not tied down by a family or even one woman.
It wasn't supposed to be this way. He was married with a child on the way and a job that he hated.
Scott's job as a fertilizer salesman often takes him to trade shows and conventions.
The only times when Scott really felt alive was when he was away. Away from his family, away from his job. He was traveling somewhere. He could be an international man of mystery.
Okay.
And it was on one of these business trips that he met Sean Sibley at a business conference.
I just can't believe you have a difficult time meeting women.
Well, I do travel a lot. It makes it kind of hard.
Scott Peterson, who incidentally had a pregnant wife back home, led the conversation with Sean Sibley by asking her about her favorite sexual positions, calling himself a horny bastard, and trying to find out if he could get with her that night.
Slow down, cowboy. I'm engaged.
So
don't be such a pig.
Sean Sibley was engaged, and she said, absolutely not, but I have a friend, a massage therapist friend.
You guys might get along really, really well.
Really? What's her name?
Her name's Amber. You should meet her.
27-year-old Amber Fry is introduced to Scott Peterson in late 2002.
Amber Fry was this, massage therapist from Fresno, beautiful and young.
When Amber met Scott, her first thought was, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the guy who's going to make my life better. She had no idea that he was going to make her life more complicated, more difficult, and she was ultimately going to end up in the public eye being scrutinized because of her relationship with Scott.
Juror John Guinasio.
They hooked up, and that's when Scott brought the strawberries and champagne to the seducer on the first night, which he did.
Over the course of the next 2 weeks, Scott and Amber engage in a whirlwind relationship that includes sex.
The only things that Amber knew about Scott were the things that Scott told her about himself. And one thing he forgot to tell her was that, oh, I'm married and I have a pregnant wife back home. We're about to have a baby boy. You have to know that at some point these lies are going to come crashing down around you.
And they do. A friend of Amber's learns that Scott is in fact married. She tells him that he has 3 days to tell Amber himself, or she will take matters into her own hands.
And he started thinking, how am I going to get out of this?
On December 6th, Scott comes up with a way to explain to Amber the fact that he is married.
To tell you the truth, I lost my wife.
Lost? Do you mean... are you saying your wife died?
So what he came up with was this convoluted, ridiculous lie about having lost his wife. He hadn't lost his wife. She was at home, pregnant, getting ready to decorate a nursery.
Oh, Scott. I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about it?
It's just so too sad.
Once Scott Peterson said that he had lost his wife, there's no turning back from that. He'd backed himself into a corner, and there was no getting out of it.
2 days later, Scott does some research on San Francisco Bay.
Juror Mike Belmaseri.
His computer showed that he did studies of the current in the bay. Scott, on the other hand, said he did it because he was going fishing and wanted to find a good place to fish.
As the holiday approaches, Scott finds himself living two very different realities.
Lacey was preparing to have a baby with the man that she loved. Amber was starting a relationship with a really great guy. The only person who knew that the two of them were living a lie was Scott Peterson.
Did you see the Christmas party invite from Jeff and Jill?
When is it?
Next Saturday.
I can't do next Saturday. I've got to be in Fresno.
Why?
I have an ad conference I have to go to.
Come on, Scott. You knew about this.
Look, I'm sorry.
Are you driving back that night?
No, I'm going to stay. It's 100 miles and it's 3 hours in the car. And
okay. Okay. Well, I just wish you would have told me that before I bought a dress for the party.
I'm sorry, sweetie.
December 14th, 10 days before Lacey goes missing, Scott attends a Christmas party in Fresno with Amber Fry. On the same night, Lacey attends a separate party alone.
I think Christmas was the first time that he realized that he wasn't going to be able to juggle this forever. It wasn't going to make any sense because two different women expected him to be with them at the exact same time.
So what time do you want us to be over there, Christmas Eve? No, that's fine. Yeah, sounds perfect.
By December 23rd, Lacey is 8 months pregnant. At 8:30 p.m. that evening, she calls her mother, Sharon Rocha.
Yeah. He's like his mommy. He likes brownies. Okay. All right. I love you, Mom. Bye.
It is the last time anyone ever hears from Lacey Peterson. Modesto, California, December 23rd, 2002. 8 months pregnant with her first child, Lacey Peterson makes Christmas plans with her mother over the phone.
A lot of stuff to get ready for, so. Yeah. Okay, so I'll see you there around 7 on Christmas Eve? Okay, all right. I love you, Mom. Bye.
It is the last time anyone will ever hear from her again. The next morning, Christmas Eve day, Scott drives out to San Francisco Bay. He will later tell police that he went fishing. At 10:30 a.m., a neighbor finds the Peterson's golden retriever loose in the neighborhood with its leash attached. Noticing Lacey's SUV parked in the driveway, the neighbor knocks on the door, but no one answers. She leaves the dog in the backyard. Sometime between 4 and 5 p.m. that afternoon, Scott returns home. He eats some leftover pizza, washes his clothes, and takes a shower. Only then does he call Lacey's parents.
Hey, Sharon, it's Scott. Hey, is Lacey there? She's not? Huh.
Within 30 minutes, Lacey's stepfather has called 911.
Actual 911 call.
How can I help you?
Yes, my son-in-law called. My daughter's been missing since this morning. She's 8 months pregnant. She took her dog for a walk in the park. Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, it wasn't even Scott Peterson who called the cops. And that's important because the cops always expect for the husband to be the one who's distraught, who's wondering, where's my wife? Oh, I've got to call the police right away.
Everybody wondered, where is Lacey and why would her husband go fishing on Christmas Eve when his wife's about ready to pop?
Scott is quickly questioned by the police, as is customary when a spouse goes missing.
When police were speaking with Scott, he was somewhat helpful. But not helpful like you would expect.
Scott said he was fishing, but he couldn't tell anybody what he was fishing for.
His answers are interpreted as odd and incomplete.
Well, what kind of bait were you using? Well, look, I don't remember.
But Scott is anxious to prove his alibi.
He pulls a receipt out of his pocket to say, oh, look, I can prove it. This is where I was. So he'd have an alibi, an airtight alibi in Scott's mind.
The next morning, local authorities launch a massive search in East La Loma Park, where Lacey was said to have been walking her dog.
There was a huge manhunt. They were looking for this missing pregnant woman, and they searched high and low.
It says a lot about the community of Modesto, because they turned out to look for this woman, and they were going to find her.
A search of the park and surrounding areas turns up nothing. Her family is convinced that she wouldn't vanish without telling them, and police suspect foul play.
Lacey Peterson is 8 months pregnant, deliriously happy with her life. There is no way that Lacey Peterson was going to run off into the night and leave everything behind.
A lot of people had suspicions right away.
You would hear people say, oh, it's probably your husband. I would think, you know, That's a pretty cruel thing to say about a person.
2 days after Lacey is reported missing, police arrive at the Peterson home with a search warrant.
They never found any blood. They never found any tissue samples in the house at all.
The next day, they search Scott's warehouse. Inside, they find a recently purchased fishing boat. On the boat's trailer, they find the remains of a powdery, cement-like substance and 5 suspicious circles within the powdery area. Prosecutors will later claim that Scott made 5 homemade anchors used to weigh down Lacey's body. Desperate for answers, friends and family establish a volunteer center. A reward is offered for the safe return of Lacey Peterson, and over 1,500 volunteers sign up to help in the search. Local media begin covering the story in earnest, and soon Lacey's disappearance is national news.
Within a week or two, everybody in the country knew who Lacey Peterson was. Everybody saw her face staring back at them from the front page of their newspaper, from their magazines, from TV.
Scott's behavior is noticeably odd for that of a distraught husband.
The officers thought that something wasn't right with Scott, but they couldn't put their finger on what wasn't. They needed that one extra push to make him more of a suspect. And they got that with a phone call.
Modesto Police Department.
My name is Amber Fry. I live in Fresno, California. And I've been having an affair with Scott Peterson.
On December 30th, 1 week after Lacey vanishes, massage therapist Amber Fry contacts police.
In November.
Having received numerous false leads, police are initially skeptical, but they soon take Amber's information seriously.
The thing about Amber was that she could back it up. She had pictures. She had other friends. She had witnesses.
Police rush to meet with Amber, who agrees to secretly record her phone conversations.
This is going to break the case wide open. Authorities were going to hear Scott Peterson unfiltered, thinking that nobody was listening to him.
They will be stunned at what they soon hear. 1 week after the disappearance of Lacey Peterson, a candlelight vigil is organized in her honor.
Scott was there, sort of off on the side, sort of aloof.
He's not even up there with the main family. He's way back in the crowd as a spectator. He's not very involved. And this is his wife that's going to have a child.
And you have to wonder, did Scott think, I can't be on TV, my girlfriend might see?
I want you all to know how very, very grateful I am for this overwhelming response. I want you to know that I am not giving up hope that my precious Lacey and her son Connor will be returned to me safely.
What no one knows is that Scott is calling Amber Fry, pretending to be in Paris.
Hey, Amber. Hey, Happy New Year.
And his behavior was, I'm in France, the Eiffel Tower, the music, the fireworks. I'm a world traveler, and the only thing he's not saying is I'm a womanizer, and I'm lacking something in my life, so I have to make up for it by this illusion.
What Scott doesn't know is that Amber is taping every word of their conversation.
Amber, you there?
I'm here.
Amber, I'm near the Eiffel Tower. New Year's celebration is unreal. The crowd is huge.
Lacey's family is unaware of Scott's relationship with Amber Fry, and they continue to be supportive of their son-in-law.
We'll find her.
For now.
Scott, are you guilty?
Scott, what is he doing?
Meanwhile, the case is becoming a media event on broadcast and cable news networks nationwide.
When a woman goes missing, if her husband is innocent, he uses the media. He gets her face out there. He gets her name out there. But Scott didn't do any of that. He avoided the cameras. It was radio silence. Not a word from Scott Peterson.
As the investigation heats up, Scott is still calling Amber regularly, and police are listening to every call.
So, I know you said before you'll be back, you know, by my birthday, so what do you anticipate plan for? Do you have anything in mind?
Your birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, I have to come for something good.
Scott Peterson lived in this world of denial where he just thought everything was going to turn out okay. But he had convinced himself that he could string Amber along with these lies and that she would believe them.
In my mind, we could be wonderful together. I could care for you in every way. For the rest of our lives, I think we'd care for each other.
How can you possibly romance a young lady when your wife is missing with your newborn-to-be?
On January 4th, 2003, investigators combed the area near the Berkeley Marina, aided by cadaver dogs. Still, not a trace of Lacey nor her unborn child is found. Police push hard for Amber Fry to get more information from Scott. And on January 6th, that's exactly what she does.
Hello.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, perfect.
Really? Oh my God, I'm so glad to hear from you.
Why?
Scott has to know that Amber is going to find out everything. So before she finds out from the TV or from the magazines or from the newspapers, he wants to tell her the truth.
You haven't been watching the news, obviously.
No.
It's the worst thing. Sorry, Amber. I'll just tell you.
What Scott Peterson tells Amber Fry will stun both her and the police and will be the turning point of the entire investigation.
Murder Made Me Famous. We'll be back after a word from our sponsors. True crime fans, rejoice. Small Town Murder is now on Podcast One. Crime and Sports' James Petragallo and Jimmy Wissman look at small towns, what makes them tick, and the murders that took place there. In-depth research, horrible tragedy, and the host's comedic spin on the whole thing. What can go wrong? Subscribe to hear new episodes every Thursday on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised. It has been 1 week since pregnant Lacey Peterson went missing in Modesto, California. There is no sign of a body and no arrests have been made, although police are focusing their investigation on Lacey's husband, Scott. Scott's lover, massage therapist Amber Fry, has just secretly come forward to authorities about their affair.
Amber Fry, although perhaps a very interesting part of that puzzle, wasn't the puzzle. She was but a piece in that puzzle. So much of what he did, his behavior, what he said, it spoke volumes for his lack of innocence.
With the heightened media attention and detectives closing in, Scott realizes that he can't keep his life a secret from Amber much longer.
As far as Scott knows, Amber's still that woman who's in the dark, who doesn't know what's going on. But she knows everything. She's been talking to the cops. She's been watching TV. She knows when he's lying. But she leads him along masterfully and gets him to tell more and more and more lies. And that would end up being Scott's undoing.
You haven't been watching the news, obviously.
No.
It's the worst thing. Sorry, Amber. I'll just tell you. The girl I got married to, her name is Lacey.
Mm-hmm.
She disappeared just before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
For the past 2 weeks, I've been in Modesto with her family and mine, searching for her.
You came to me early in December and told me that you had lost your wife. What was that about?
She's alive.
What?
She's alive.
Where? She's alive? Where?
In Modesto. Now, I know, this is the hardest.
Amber asks a lot of questions. She wants answers from the man who she thought was her knight in shining armor. And he's giving her answers, but they're more and more lies. And it's all on tape.
Okay, so again, you never answered my question. Why did you tell me it would be the first holidays without her?
I can't. I can't explain anymore now.
what Amber needs him to say, and she's trying to get him to say that, yes, I told you before Lacey was gone that I had lost my wife. Would he be stupid enough to say that again?
And you came and told me this elaborate lie about her missing and this tragedy and that...
No.
And that this will be the first holidays without her?
To me, I never said. Amber.
Yes.
God, I don't want to fight with you. I never said tragedy or missing.
Oh, yes, you said you've lost your wife.
No.
Obviously, without me saying much, but we will...
I said that I lost my wife.
Yes, you did.
I did, and yes.
There it is. He has admitted on tape that he had said that he lost Lacey.
Once again, Scott Peterson is brought in for questioning. But this time, detectives want Scott to know they are on to him.
They pull out a picture of him with Amber and his arms around her. He's busted, right? This is the time to come clean. He looks at the picture and he says, "Is that supposed to be me?" Well, who else is it supposed to be, Scott? The photo doesn't lie. That's you with your blonde girlfriend.
Under pressure, Scott will eventually admit to a romantic relationship with Amber Fry. But being guilty of adultery does not mean you are guilty of murder. Then, 1 month after Lacey's disappearance, Amber Fry tells the world about her ongoing affair with Scott Peterson. And instantly, the story becomes front-page news.
Scott told me he was not married. We did have a romantic relationship.
This is what tabloids are made of, you know?
People already were tuning in. But when it became apparent that Scott had been having an affair, then it really broke open.
And suddenly, Scott Peterson wasn't this innocent, grieving husband. He was the philanderer who was having an affair with a pretty blonde on the side.
The allegations of a girlfriend. Scott, why don't you answer some questions?
And it went from being a big story to a massive, huge story that you couldn't escape.
Up until this point, Lacey's family has stood behind Scott.
Sharon would later tell me that this was the moment when she found out that he was having an affair that she realized, wait, Scott did this.
Where is my daughter, Scott? Yes, you do know. You do know, and I want you to tell me. Where is Lacey and her baby?
As it became clear that he had hidden that relationship from everybody, people started considering him the prime suspect. Of course, he always was in the eyes of the authorities.
I just want to know where she is. I just want to be able to bury my daughter, Scott. Where is she?
Just 4 days after Amber's press conference, Scott decides to take his case to the media. He sits down with ABC's Diane Sawyer.
I think everybody sitting at home wants the answer to the same question. Did you murder your wife?
No. I did not. And I had absolutely nothing to do with her disappearance.
And he did himself no favors. Everybody watched it and thought, oh, well, now we know he did it. I've never seen an interview do so much damage to somebody's credibility and somebody's reputation as what Scott Peterson did.
Scott's behavior grows more and more suspicious. He begins to make secret trips to Berkeley Marina, presumably to check on the progress of authorities searching the bay for Lacey.
Scott used to travel from Modesto to the Berkeley Marina, about 98 miles, stay there for less than 5 minutes and leave because he wanted to see what was going on the bay.
In one of several other inexplicable acts, Scott sells Lacey's SUV and tries to sell their home. It has been less than 2 months since she vanished.
The prosecution painted it as, well, if she's not coming back, then why not get rid of it?
Detectives are anxious to arrest and charge Scott with Lacey's murder. But without a body or physical evidence, they know they are fighting an uphill battle. Then, on April 13th, 2003, 3 months and 20 days since Lacey Peterson vanished, a couple walking their dog along the shore of San Francisco Bay make a gruesome discovery. Floating in a pool of water are the remains of a full-term human fetus.
Honor, the son-to-be, washed up first, and that was probably the worst.
And what would wash ashore the very next day would not only add yet another layer of horror, but would begin to paint a vivid picture of exactly how a truly unspeakable crime unfolded. April 13th, 2003. The decomposed remains of a full-term human fetus wash up on the shore of San Francisco Bay. It will take an autopsy to determine that, in fact, the fetus is male. The very next day, less than a mile downshore, another couple spot their dog chewing on something wedged near an embankment of concrete blocks. Closer inspection reveals the face-down body of an adult female, wearing cream-colored maternity pants and maternity bra.
The bodies of mother and unborn son washed ashore not far from where he had told everybody he had been fishing.
The exact cause of the woman's death is impossible to determine as a result of decomposition. The body is missing its head, both forearms, and feet. Reports from the medical examiner reveal that two ribs were cracked during or near the time of death. DNA tests verify that the remains are those of Lacey and that the fetus is that of her unborn son, Connor. While photographs of the remains are sealed by the court, juror John Guanasso is among the select few individuals who will ever see the images of what washed ashore that April of 2003.
They were graphic, horrific. Imagine looking at photos with no head, no arms or legs.
Lacey and Connor had been at the bottom of the bay for nearly 3.5 months.
The worst and most disturbing is actually being at the bottom of the bay so long, there's actually a sea life living inside her torso.
With more than enough incriminating evidence in hand, police set out to arrest Scott Peterson.
Scott Peterson has been arrested for murder in the death of his wife, Lacey, and their unborn son.
Scott Peterson was arrested in a parking lot in San Diego. He says he was there to go play golf with his brother. Scott had dyed his hair. He had money with him. He had a fake ID. And most interestingly, he had 12 tablets of Viagra.
Also found in the car was a gun and a map to Amber Fry's place of work. Police speculate Scott may have planned to kill Amber, a witness against him, then flee to Mexico. With Scott's arrest, media coverage escalates into a full-fledged frenzy. Scott Peterson hires high-profile attorney Mark Garagos to take over his case. Amber Fry secures hotshot defender Gloria Allred to clear her of any involvement in Lacey's murder. On April 21st, 2003, Scott pleads not guilty to 2 counts of murder, one for Lacey and one for her unborn son, Connor. Peterson's fate will be decided by a jury. Those who are selected have no idea of the media circus that's in store for them, nor can they imagine the horrific testimony they will have to consider.
I don't know how or why I was on that jury, but I was there.
Looking at Scott from less than 20 feet away, it was hard to believe that he can actually murder his wife.
As jurors listen, prosecutors meticulously piece together the disturbing events prior to, during, and after Lacey's death. They believe he is motivated by his extramarital affair. Since Scott Peterson never testifies at his trial or admits to the crime, the prosecution can only speculate on certain details based on the evidence. Some days before the crime, Scott creates 5 concrete anchors in his warehouse. One will be used for his new boat. The other 4 will be used to weigh Lacey down in the bay. On December 23rd, Lacey visits a salon and calls her mother for the last time.
Oh, I'm so tired. I
What's that for?
They believed that Lacey was killed in the couple's home in Modesto on the 23rd or the 24th. There was no physical evidence that showed exactly how Lacey had died. So the prosecution had some trouble kind of connecting the dots at first for the jurors.
And we all came up with that she was strangled.
What are you doing?
Being that she was strangled, there's not much physical evidence except for maybe some blood through the nose or out of the mouth.
Scott removes Lacey's blouse, perhaps because it could help authorities more easily identify the body. He wraps Lacey's body in a tarp and places it into a large work box in the bed of his pickup truck. He then stashes Lacey's blouse in the back of a dresser drawer, where it will later be found by investigators. On Christmas Eve morning, Scott drives to his warehouse, where he transfers Lacey's body to his boat. He then drives to Berkeley Marina and sets off into the bay. Away from boat traffic, Scott attaches his homemade concrete anchors to Lacey's hands and feet.
If we go on the premise that Lacey was weighted down with anchors, if he did four anchors, one on each leg and each arm, that would certainly account for the body parts that were found. All that was a torso, there's no head, no arms, no legs.
He then dumps her overboard.
How it was done isn't nearly important as the fact that it was done. All I know is body, bay, Scott. Important factors.
She will remain at the bottom of San Francisco Bay until decomposition eventually frees her from the anchors. Only then do Lacey and her unborn son drift separately to shore.
Looking over at Scott, it was surprising how little emotion he showed. Here we're talking about finding his dead wife, finding the dead unborn child, and he's just sitting there with a blank look on his face, and sometimes even smile. For days, I was just feet away from Scott Peterson. Did I see any remorse? Never.
He has become a personality the public loves to loathe.
Everyone in the public had an opinion on Scott Peterson, but none of our opinions mattered. The only opinions that carried any weight were those 12 men and women that were sitting there in the jury box, and none of us knew what they were thinking.
The only question remaining is whether Scott Peterson would receive the justice he deserved.
I doubt that there has been another instance where the tension of hundreds of people was so palpable that you'll never forget it.
That tension was about to explode as the nation learns Scott Peterson's fate. And afterward, one juror makes a shocking confession. The jury deliberation in the trial of Scott Peterson for the murder of his wife Lacey and her unborn son lasts 7 days.
Those deliberations and that murder trial was very, very stressful. there was a huge effort put to make sure that we were not exposed to things that had anything to do with the Scott Peterson trial.
There were important pieces of evidence the jury were not allowed to hear, notably that Scott refused to take a lie detector test.
We took our time, we removed ourselves from any biases that we may have, and we attacked the facts, and only the facts, not the person. Finally, when you get all the pieces together, it forms a picture. And it forms a very clear picture.
Finally, on November 12th, 2004, the jury announces its verdict on national television.
When the jury came back with a verdict, everyone was congregating around that courthouse, waiting to hear what would happen.
I doubt that there has been another instance where the tension of hundreds of people was so palpable that you'll never forget it.
And then the verdict came down.
We, the jury, in the above entitled cause, find the defendant, Scott Lee Peterson, guilty of the crime of murder of Lacey Denise Peterson.
We heard people cheering, cheering our verdict. And, you know, we were confused because we didn't think there was anything to cheer about.
Scott Peterson is found guilty of the first-degree murder of Lacey and the second-degree murder of Connor. Scott's reaction to the verdict is cold and unemotional.
When they managed to convict him, it was almost like, I can breathe again. We can all breathe again. Justice has been served and things are happening the way they should.
Scott is later sentenced to death.
And that was the hardest part for everybody because we have to live with our decision. And now you're part of making a decision on somebody's life. They had to take a look at their inner soul and make sure they're doing it because it's their decision, nobody else's.
He is currently on death row at San Quentin and is confined to a 7x9-foot cell. He has only one photo hanging on his wall, a smiling shot of he and Lacey.
And now we're just waiting to see if he'll actually be executed.
Now, he's leading a pretty nice life over on death row. He goes out and he plays basketball with all these murderers. I mean, I tell you, I would personally, if there was no one willing to, I would personally execute him. Because I know the pain that he's inflicted on so many people.
But the motive behind Lacey's murder has never truly been revealed.
I believe, and now that I've had time to look back on it again, I'm even more convinced now that Connor was the reason Lacey was killed. I think that had Connor not existed, had Lacey not been pregnant, she may have been alive a lot longer.
The trial of Scott Peterson for the murder of his wife and unborn son took 9 months and cost a staggering $4.1 million. Lacey's family lives with the tragedy as best they can. For Sharon Rocha, Christmas, the time when Lacey went missing, is the most difficult time of year.
Lacey's funeral was so emotional and so intimate that it didn't feel even appropriate to report on some of the things at the time. But I talked to Sharon Rocha, and she said, as the casket went by, all that Sharon Rocha could think about was that Lacey was being buried without her arms and wouldn't be able to hold her own child in that coffin. I've never shared that before.
Amber Fry is a single mother of two and still works as a massage therapist. She insists she has put the Scott Peterson nightmare behind her, and she no longer wants to be known as, quote, the woman who dated the most hated man in America.
Her story is still very tragic. She can never walk down the street and not be that woman. She'll always be the blonde bombshell. And she can't live a normal life, and that'll never happen for her.
The high-profile case of Lacey Peterson's murder and that of her unborn son led to the United States Congress passing the Unborn Victims of Violence Act, which is widely known as Lacey and Connor's Law. So in the end, the unprecedented notoriety of this case at least had one positive outcome.
Everybody knows a Scott Peterson, We went to college with them. We looked up to them. We wanted to be his friend. And there are Scott Petersons all around the country. What we didn't know is that behind the all-American looks and the charm and the poise, there was something going on in his mind that only Scott can tell us what that was.
That concludes this episode of Murder Made Me Famous. Don't forget to go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, for clips, extras, and more. And check out the new season starting Saturday, April 14th on Reels channel. Don't forget to subscribe on PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, and Apple Podcasts.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.